Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The budget gap between Florida's two legislative chambers is yawning, especially in the area of education.
And so this is not a tax increase. It is simply keeping things as they are, and then including the new construction that comes on.
Also tonight, how about permission to substitute computer coding for a foreign language requirement in school? Some students say it would really help them.
If I attempt to take Spanish, the school will not provide a speech therapist to assist, and my private therapy is maxed out with English.
We'll also delve into what state universities say is a shortage of law officers and mental health staff, and take a look at yet another attempt at revamping the Florida retirement system. I'm Tom Flanagan. On the 23rd day of the 60-day Florida lawmaking session, this is Capitol Report. A rift has emerged on a now familiar fault line in the Florida House and Senate education spending plans. Len Hatter reports the chambers are again at odds over how to count what's known as the required local effort to fund public schools.
The required local effort is exactly what it sounds like, the local share of dollars that helps fund public schools around the state. The money mostly comes from local property tax revenues. As property values rise, owners pay more in taxes, which translates into more dollars for schools. The Senate wants to count the increase in its budget. The $535 million in additional local school spending is based largely on those collections, says Senate Education Budget Chairman David Simmons.
We'll have that so that we will be able to discuss it with our colleagues in the House. We have great respect for them and their analysis and their opinions on this issue, and obviously we'll look forward to a discussion with them on this based upon what the facts are and what this number truly comprises.
If the Senate gets its way, local school districts will draw the money down through changes in their required local effort, the amount of money they add to the property taxes. But there is a problem. And that problem is in the Florida House.
In our budget, the House's commitment to reducing taxes specifically results in a $509.4 million savings for property owners, as this recommended budget keeps the required local effort the same for fiscal year 2017-2018 as it was in 2015-2016 and 2016-2017.
House Education Chairman Manny Diaz is not interested in collecting the extra dollars. Diaz and House Speaker Richard Corcoran have argued if more money is being collected through higher property values, that's a tax increase on homeowners. Instead, Diaz wants to use state money to offset the increase in local effort. He calls it a rollback.
So again, line 2C shows you that in our budget we expend that $509 million to buy that rollback.
The House plan would require local districts to collect less money, and they do that by rolling back their portion of the millage rate. Due mostly to differences in how to fund the required local effort, the House and Senate are about $540 million apart in their education spending plans. Simmons says the House's way could be seen as a tax cut if districts are required to roll back their taxes in order to allow the state to fill in the gap. And he argues the Senate's reliance on increasing values does not amount to a tax hike.
There is a difference between maintaining a level and actually giving a tax cut. And so this is not a tax increase. It is simply keeping things as they are, and then including the new construction that comes on to the to the tax rolls.
But House leaders have been firm about their stance. Let the state use its dollars to fund the spending increase to public schools. Under Florida law, the legislature has one job, to fund a budget. And those debates have now begun. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
While we're on the subject of education, here's a story about education subjects. The Florida House is looking at allowing students to take a computer coding course to fulfill credit requirements in lieu of a foreign language. Catherine Buckler reports the bill was amended before the vote.
The bill got unanimous approval in a House subcommittee after it was amended, after the foreign language portion was taken out. It now focuses on encouraging students to take a coding class and how to prepare them for jobs in the field. The Articulation Coordinating Committee would set the requirements for computer classes. The measure was proposed by Republican Representative Elizabeth Porter.
And among other things, the ACC recommendations must also identify gaps in current policy, curricula, programs, and practices that prevent students from pursuing post-secondary education and careers in computer science and related fields.
Jeremy Lananowski has severe speech apraxia. After speaking, he had a translation on his phone that said his testimony again.
My name is Jeremy Lananowski. I have speech apraxia, and I know some people think I not do anything in general because of my disability. But I sell in math, science, and thinking outside the box.
I would like to go to college and study engineering or computer science. However, if I attempt to take Spanish, the school will not provide a speech therapist to assist, and my private therapy is maxed out with English.
Andrew Lananowski spoke as well. Lananowski says he'd rather his son Jeremy practice in something other than a foreign language.
My son will never compete in that foreign language. We have people that will never compete in those foreign language. And we really don't teach foreign language. So to address the issue, my daughter, she took Spanish. She did excelled it. We were speaking Hungarian and Russian to her at home. These are some of the foreign languages that actually we critically need.
As of now, the Florida Department of Education requires students to take 2 credits of a foreign language, excluding students with a native language other than English.
So someone who's concerned about these foreign languages, make sure that the kids who can excel in those foreign languages are given the opportunity to take 2 or 3 languages, and the kids that are not going to excel in those languages and not going to be successful can take a look at alternative paths.
The bill was passed without debate, but still needs 2 more committees to pass the House floor. I'm Catherine Buckler.
A state Senate panel today signed off on an initial health and human services budget plan that counts on the federal government coughing up $607 million for a program that sends money to Florida hospitals. State officials have grappled in recent years with reductions in the low-income pool, or LIP, program, which provides money to help care for poor and uninsured patients. The state's asking the feds to approve $607 million for the coming year. And while the request has not yet been approved, the Senate Health and Human Services Appropriations Subcommittee included it in a budget proposal that otherwise would cut hospital Medicaid funding by more than $258 million. Subcommittee Chairwoman Anna Terry Flores, Republican of Miami, said state officials are relatively confident that the federal government will approve the money, which also was included in Governor Rick Scott's budget proposal for the fiscal year that starts July 1st. Now, if the money isn't approved, Flores said the Senate will have to, in her words, reassess. An initial House budget proposal released this week includes nearly $622 million in cuts for hospitals and does not bank on federal approval of the additional money. Still to come on Capitol Report, Board of Governors Chairman Tom Kunt says they need $30 million to hire more than 100 mental health professionals and police officers. Carlos Gomez directs Florida State University's Counseling Center. He says they're unable to see students on a weekly basis to do therapy because they're short-staffed.
So at this point, it's just trying to make sure that everybody is safe. And that's how we've been kind of handling it up to this point.
A Senate affordable housing discussion focused on local permitting fees, but some lawmakers weren't having it.
Having spent 18 years as a county commissioner, I take exception to the fact that local governments are the problem here.
Florida lawmakers want to change the way local governments can award public contracts. The bill would preempt local wage and employment rules, which proponents say impede the free market.
It's about provincialism. It's about parochialism. It's about exclusion. It's about protection.
And no one likes waste, fraud, and abuse, especially the inspectors general who ride herd on state government agencies.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Florida's universities say they need more money to hire additional mental health counselors and law enforcement officers. Sarah Mueller reports school officials say they're seeing a dramatic rise in students who need help coping with anxiety, depression, and academic stress.
Timothy Jones wasn't successful when he first started at the University of West Florida. That's because the Navy veteran was homeless and dealing with being sexually assaulted. But now he has a place to live and will graduate in May because of the counseling he got at UWF.
None of this would be possible if not for the love and support of my university. The Counseling and Wellness Center assisted me in anchoring my ship and made it possible for me to navigate the rough waters that is college.
Board of Governors Chairman Tom Kuntz says the university system needs $30 million to hire more than 100 mental health professionals and police officers. Its goal is two officers and one mental health counselor per 1,000 students.
We must make sure our campuses are meeting the nationally recommended minimum ratios in both areas and that we are providing students with the services to help them graduate and meet their full potentials.
Carlos Gomez directs Florida State University's Counseling Center. He says he's unable to see students for therapy as often as he'd like because the center's short-staffed. Gomez says students enter college without the resilience and coping skills they need.
A lot of it is how we're raising our kids, I think, in my opinion. So, you know, like nowadays, you'll see when children are in competitions, everybody gets a participation prize. There isn't this built-in learning ability to learn how to kind of cope with failure.
Gomez says when students fail academically, they can become distressed and suicidal. He says substance abuse is also an issue on college campuses, and they're seeing more students with a severe mental and substance abuse problem. Gomez says Tallahassee doesn't have the community resources that cities like Miami or Tampa do.
We should be seeing our students who need our services at least once a week. And so we're staying away from that because we just simply don't have the resources. So at this point, it's just trying to make sure that everybody is safe. And that's how we've been kind of handling it up to this point.
Governor Rick Scott and Senate and House leaders say they plan to spend more money on mental health in the upcoming budget. The governor is suggesting adding $25 million more for mental health and substance abuse than last year. Senator Gary Farmer is trying to make sure some of the increase goes to universities.
And so again, I thank the board for standing up on this issue. We need to stay loud on this issue. We need to get these chambers to recognize that this is something we have to fund.
House Speaker Richard Corcoran wants to cut spending by $1 billion next year and has targeted higher education for reductions. Board of Governors Chairman Tom Kuntz says there's a big difference between the House and Senate's proposed budgets. But he says he thinks universities will land in a good place. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
A Senate panel is discussing how to re-envision Florida's affordable housing system. Nick Evans reports.
The conversation in the Senate Transportation, Tourism, and Economic Development Committee was freewheeling, so much so that Professor Sam Staley didn't get a chance to give his presentation. But he did get a quick word in at the end.
Say that this is a really important issue, but it's an important moment in Florida's history to be taking this up. With the revisions that came with the growth management law that came in 2011 and coming out of the recession at this point, there's no better time to start addressing these kinds of issues right now. So I just want to.
The time is ripe, Staley says, because the broader economic situation is favorable. But other speakers argue the time has come because the state could be on the verge of a crisis. Florida's recovery has been fueled by relatively low-paying jobs, and the state is facing a shortfall in affordable housing. Edward Pinto works for the conservative think tank the American Enterprise Institute, but he spoke on behalf of an organization called Economical Housing LLC. He argues the tax credits used to subsidize rental housing simply can't keep up with Florida's population growth.
That yields about 3,000 units 3,000 units, yet there were 114,000 households added last year. So you see the math. The faster you go, the behinder you get. And these programs are incredibly expensive. They're not sustainable at these prices.
Instead, Pinto believes Florida needs to cut into local permitting and impact fees. He says reducing costs by devoting a chunk of the state's housing trust fund to fees and requiring local governments to match it would begin to make a dent. The emphasis on local permitting continued with Adrian Moore from a libertarian think tank called the Reason Foundation.
If you compare the construction costs in a very unrestrictive place like Dallas to a very restrictive place like San Diego, you can see that construction's a very small. The difference in construction costs is small. The difference in the land and regulatory restriction costs is predominantly driving the differential.
St. Petersburg Republican Jeff Brandis chairs the committee and invited the slate of speakers. But their suggestions that local governments are hampering the growth of housing faced pushback. Naples Republican Senator Kathleen Passidomo seizes on Moore's point about the cost of regulations and land.
Because you can't have somebody who is working on the beach living next to the beach. It's not going to happen because the land costs too much. But so we need to focus on transportation so people can get from their homes to their jobs, not put their home next to their jobs if it isn't affordable.
West Palm Beach Democrat Bobby Powell undercuts the call for a return to earlier policies.
I don't think the 1950s or 1960s or 50 or 60 years ago was an accurate representation of the state housing was working back then. A number of the housing acts and laws that have come since that time were because at the time housing was not working.
And George Gaynor, a Republican from Panama City, is blunt in his assessment.
Having spent 18 years as a county commissioner, I take exception to the fact that local governments are the problem here. Local governments are glad for you to build a house and increase the ad valorem tax base of that community.
But Brandis does believe the state's current policy isn't up to the affordable housing challenge. There are a handful of related measures slowly working their way through the chambers, but Brandis plans to spend the summer holding more hearings to develop a comprehensive set of policy recommendations that could break with the current system. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The battle between statewide uniformity and home rule autonomy continues at the state capitol. Florida lawmakers want to set new statewide standards for public contracts, but local governments say the plan threatens their independence. Kate Payne has that story.
The concept of home rule is baked into Florida government. That policy of self-determination means municipalities can pass their own minimum wage and human rights ordinances, or set certain requirements for publicly funded contracts.
And we went into a series of processes that looked at the values of our community and our county.
Coconut Creek Democrat Kristen Jacobs represents Broward County in the Florida House, but she used to sit on that county's commission, which chooses public contractors based on their social policies.
That included whether you provide domestic partner benefits. It included whether or not you paid a living wage. It included other things that helped figure out which was the company that was best going to draw down our dollars.
But Pace Republican Representative J.R. Williamson wants to preempt local governments from making those calls when projects are funded by a majority of state dollars.
The purpose of this bill is to ensure that with public construction, where taxpayer dollars are at stake, that we maintain an open, honest, and competitive bid process. Around the states, we have local governments that are whittling down the bid process before it even starts.
Some counties have decided a higher wage and preference for local workers outweighs the cost of possibly losing some bidders. Carol Bowen represents the Associated Builders and Contractors, and she says those policies are hurting small businesses.
Your small businesses can't handle when you tell them, you can only hire from here. You can only pay this. You can only train there. They will stop doing the work. And if we're all worried about small businesses, then we should want this bill, and we should want it with a broader reach.
Auburndale Republican Representative Neil Cumby says when the state is paying most of the costs, local governments shouldn't be able to set their own rules.
If you've got a $1 million project and $700,000 comes from the state taxpayers, which includes Crestview and Palatka and a lot of other smaller communities, then those rules can't apply. We're going to treat those differently because those dollars do come from folks from Pensacola to Key West.
Cumbie says state money should be spent with the diversity of the state in mind.
It's about provincialism. It's about parochialism. It's about exclusion. It's about protection. And we heard the word preference. It's about preference. We prefer people that do things that we want it done.
The debate has lawmakers caught between two overarching principles in Florida politics, the virtues of home rule and the free market. Boca Raton Democratic Representative Joe Abruzzo says he's stunned by the outcome.
For decades, I have heard the majority party talk about small government, pushing, making sure we shrink government and giving more power and more control to the local government and what's closest to the people. And then we sit up here and we legislate policy that hinders local government every step of the way.
The House Government Accountability Committee moved the bill forward Wednesday. It now heads to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Florida House Republicans have revived a perennial campaign to change the retirement options under the state's retirement system. Sasha Cordner has the latest.
North Fort Myers Republican Representative Matt Caldwell's proposal includes an expansion of the number of people who will now qualify for full benefits upon the death of their spouse. Left with only one option, newly elected officials would also no longer have a choice in retirement plans.
If you are newly elected after July 1st of 18, your only option would be investment plan. We would no longer allow new elected officials to participate in the pension plan.
Within the Florida retirement system, state employees now choose between the traditional pension plan and the investment plan, a 401k style option. The more popular retirement option is the traditional pension plan. It's also the default for employees who don't make a choice. But Caldwell's bill would change that default to the investment plan. He says his main concern is addressing the vesting period. With the pension plan, you have to wait 6 to 8 years before you can take your full benefits. With the investment plan, you only have to wait 1 year.
To think of a type of employee we're talking about, a recent college graduate that comes to be an aide here in the Capitol. They're 22 years old. They're not thinking about retirement. They ignore the choices they need to make. They get defaulted to the pension. You know, they serve maybe 2 or 4 years and then have a private market opportunity and they leave for other employment. They get nothing. They receive nothing for those 4 years in terms of retirement. They didn't invest. They weren't here long enough. Had they been in the investment plan, they would be able to take that cash money and transfer it to wherever they're going next.
That provision has been particularly divisive in recent years, as it's not the first time this bill has come up in the Florida legislature.
The controversial aspect of this bill, the default swap, this is the third year we will have proposed this in the House.
For several employee unions, it's not a great change. They say the investment plan is more risky. And Rich Templin with the AFL-CIO calls the 401k style plan inferior.
The 401k was never designed as a retirement instrument. It was actually designed for folks with a quick influx of money needing a place to park that money for a short period of time to escape tax liability on that money. As a matter of fact, Ted Benna, who is credited as the creator of the 401k, now calls the 401k and related plans like we have in the investment plan here in Florida a monster that he wishes he had never created.
And Linda Russell with the Florida Education Association agrees.
A first-year teacher starting today who worked a full 35 years until retirement in the pension plan will expect a whopping monthly benefit of about $2,000 a month. They will live on $24,000 a year in their retirement. That is not a wealthy retirement by any stretch of the imagination. That same teacher who either elects or is defaulted into the investment plan will get a whopping benefit at the end of 35 years of about $9,600 a year. That is $800 a month.
Still, the House Government Accountability Committee, which Caldwell chairs, approved the proposal 14-8, with Democrats opposed. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida's inspectors general work in each state agency to ensure accountability and integrity within the offices. But Regan McCarthy reports some say the inspectors need more skills, access, and autonomy to do their jobs best.
Plant City Republican Representative Daniel Rollerson has a bill he says will enhance what he calls the eyes and ears of the taxpayers.
Some of the highlights of the bill is that it requires the Chief Inspector General in the Governor's Office to have the same qualifications as Inspectors General throughout all the agencies. It adds forensic accounting or forensic expertise as an accepted qualification to become an inspector general.
Rollerson says that last part is important since the main task charged to the inspectors is rooting out fraud and waste.
And forensic accounting focuses on fraud, so that was something we felt was good to add to the qualifications of an inspector general.
The measure also requires the State Board of Administration to officially recognize its existing inspector general position. Ash Williams is the executive director and chief investment officer of the State Board of Administration. He says he supports the need for good oversight, but has concerns with Rollerson's plan.
Unlike a number of state entities, we have numerous other oversight bodies. I report directly to three statewide elected officials, the governor, the attorney general, and the chief financial officer, and in fact, probably the only state employee in Florida that's subject to annual reappointment. That's pretty good oversight in and of itself and keeps me focused.
Williams says the State Board of Administration also has a committee which oversees audits that might otherwise be managed by the Inspector General. And Williams worries Rollerson's legislation, which lays out duties for each agency's Inspector General, could conflict with the duties assigned to the Audit Committee.
The conflict is Inspectors General and 2055 hold those same supervisory roles that our Audit Committee currently holds. That's the conflict.
But Rollerson says he's not sure a little bit of duplicative oversight is necessarily a bad thing in this case.
The SBA manages $180 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars.
Rollerson's measure comes along with another that would allow a public records exemption for records related to ongoing investigations. Both bills passed through the House Public Integrity and Ethics Committee Wednesday. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, Kate Payne, and Catherine Buckler. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capital Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.